Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Kia ora, nau mai, haere mai. Welcome to another Aotearoa Rugby pod with a lot to unpack between the All Blacks and the Black Ferns. Quite different results over the weekend. So much to talk about. I'm joined by James Parsons and also Bryn Hall. I'm Ross Carl. The Aotearoa Rugby pod coming to you every week here on Sky. Boys, the All Blacks. Let's start there. Jipper, were you surprised that it was going to be, that it was this big a win in the end?
I suppose it was to the Welsh's own demise. I think if you look at that first 40, they had ample opportunities in the attacking 22, and you know, a couple of times it was skill set error turned over due to that rush defence of the ABs. Other time was going to the corner and overthrowing a couple of lineouts. And then when they finally got that charge down and led to that scrum, they gave away a scrum penalty. So I think I was surprised in the sense of the amount of opportunities they had, that they didn't pounce on them. But then if you look at the way Sam Whitelock made decisions to really build in the style of play, the All Blacks went through the middle a lot. We saw Adi Savia do it time and time again, and his post-contact meters were, you know, seriously impressive. And even when they made a little error, I think Dave Harvilli bobbled it earlier and they picked through the middle. They're always making good gains through the middle. And that's quite energy sapping defense because you're always, you know, having to creep back and get in behind and fill those roles. And then, you know, as I mentioned before, Sam Whitelock went for the three, built that scoreboard pressure. And then once that was built, you saw them just ratchet things up. You know, obviously Will Jordan's brilliance, but with a little work off the ball from Ethan Blackadder to just get a little escort that created a little bit more space. And then the 65th minute quick throw in was them just tightening the screws again where Severese scored. So not surprised with how they orchestrated it and not surprised with the amount of opportunities. You know, like I had in my notes, they'll be devastated with the amount of opportunities they left out there, the Welsh, in that first 40 in particular. Hmm.
It's quite a flourish at the end there, Bryn. Those support players and the way that they scored those tries, it was quite something. It doesn't matter whether the opposition's under strength. To pull off some of those tries takes vision and execution of a really high level.
Yeah, it does. And look when you can score 36 points in the second half. But I thought all the work was really done in that first half. Jip brought up some really good points around them going through the middle, especially Adi Sevier. I think in that first half, he was fantastic around getting it over the advantage line with, traditionally, with the Welsh and even this Northern Hemisphere teams, they tend to have a really good line speed pressure, but a really good way that you can break through that is going through the middle early on, which they even did. You know, you even look at Nipolo Lalu, who's probably kicking himself, dropping that ball over the line. It would have been his first meat pie, but you know, that kind of game plan was implemented really, really well in that first half. And look, I think the Welsh had plenty of opportunities. You know, it was in that first half, ahead of my notes, was the 37th and the 39th minute is when they had opportunities inside their half, and there were two overthrows that kind of just stunted their momentum. And I guess against the All Blacks, you couldn't really afford to give them that much, to give them more opportunities to not get it right. And then, you know, the game was in the balance in probably that 60th minute, and Wayne Pivak actually brought up a really good point, is that even though they weren't playing well and kind of staying in the fight, and then Reece Priestling came on and puts it in that little grubber through on the 59th minute to get them back in the game. And then just from that kickoff, that exit, you know, that penalty that really just stunted that kind of try. It was an easy out for the All Blacks. And then I guess from that kind of mistake of that penalty that the Welsh gave away after scoring that try, it pretty much just opened up the floodgates through that. So I think the Welsh can take can take a lot of learnings from there. And that's what I heard from Wayne Pivik and in his post match is that yes, they did throw a lot at them, but I think in the kind of big test matches and those kind of moments, you just can't afford to give the All Blacks too many opportunities with the end. Then like you said, Ross, you know, been able to score some of the tries. You know, I thought the bench came on and played really well in that last 20 minutes where they were probably a little bit hungry to in that kind of globe style Trotters kind of set up last week with so much points being scored. But you know, I thought they came on really well and even added, you know, Sevi Reese came on and but even for his try, you know, he had three or four touches and you know you could just see the excitement of him being in and around the ball. So overall, I thought it was a great performance, and we talked about Bodie as well. Look, I thought he was the best on park, not just with the intercepts. You know, how many times have we seen that in his career with the All Blacks, and even at the Blues, and even the Hurricanes? It's not by luck that happens. And you know, he even said it was a tough week for him. You know, think about it, it's your 100th game. You don't want to have a stinker and jump. You've played 100 games, and you know it's a little bit different preparing for the 300th game. But now, look, I thought he was outstanding. Ardie Sevier. And then no doubt we'll touch on a few more All Blacks if there were standouts in the game as well.
Ardie Savier's ability to get over the gain line, you know, it just never ceases to amaze, especially when you look at him pound for pound, Jipper.
Oh, look, I had him down as best on park, personally. I thought his game, it's one of the best test matches I've seen him play. It's the post-contact meters that, you know, just blows your mind. He just seems to keep coming out the other side. Even if people hang on to him, he'll drag them another couple of meters. Massive turnover in the 22-metre zone, key timer in defence. You know, talk about Sevi Reese's try and Rico Ioane. Well, who's there as well with them? Ardie Savier in the 65th minute after doing a hell of a lot of toil in that first 40. So his work off the ball, you know, normally I take a deeper look into players' stats that stand out to me, but I just didn't need to on this occasion because I really wanted to emphasise his work off the ball in attack and D. Created opportunities for others, but also when he had his chance to roll up his sleeve on defence, he was physical, he was dominant, or he was in that breakdown getting turnovers and ball in hand was spoken about. Sensational performance. You know, he was world class against a really strong Welsh pack that fought hard. You know, I thought their Lucy's fought, you know, Moriarty while he was on there until he went off was good. You know, Basham was really good and busy and you know, new into his career, and Wainwright was physical. So they were up against some big men that were looking to show and assert that dominance, and he led the way.
When you talk about the work off the ball and attack, what kind of stuff are you talking about?
Well, let's use the 65th minute. Geordie Barrett puts that kick through. Reeks and Sevu are chasing through to regather it, and Artie's on the edge, and as I said, he's put some big shift minutes in, and he works off the ball to be in a position where he can receive a pop-up offload to then offload it back to Sevi Reese to score the try. You know, so often enough it could have been easy for him to think that play was over, but he stayed engaged, he stayed involved, and that's why he's been in the All Blacks for so long. You know, he was massive in that moment.
Well, I suppose an interesting selection for them, Bryn, coming up now is with Dalton Papali'i being so impressive again on the weekend. You've obviously got Sam Kane returning. You've got a game against Italy where maybe they'd give Sam Whitelock a rest before the bigger games in the test matches. What do you do this weekend against Italy at number 7?
Oh, look, I think we're going to see a lot of changes, I think. You know, to give guys an opportunity to kind of put their hand up for the next coming two test matches. And you know, look, that's no disrespect to Italy, and it's a different place playing in Rome, and a lot of those guys, younger fellas, probably haven't played there, but I think it is an opportunity to give guys an opportunity to play. So whether that's Sam Kane coming back in, you've got Dane Coles as well, does Richie come in and you give Bodie a week off, you know, even the likes of, you know, Sevu, Luke Jacobson, you know, kind of players like that. So I think that I think Sam might come in start. Given some minutes, he's, you know, from Ian Foster's words, he wanted to bring him in and have some good training under his belt, even though he played that test match against the USA. And I think it's a good opportunity to bring him in, get him some meaningful minutes. And then, you know, depending on how he goes, you know, Dalton's played really, really well. So, you know, it's a good opportunity for Sam to come in and then stake his claim to get back to where we know Sam Kane is going to be.
Couple of interesting positions for me is lock. Not sure where Brody's injury's at. So, you know, we might see some, you know, opportunity for Josh Lord and Tupu Avahi to start. And then if, you know, looking, if they're not going to bring someone in, depending on how bad Brody's injury is, you know, is there a makeshift Lucy that can potentially move into that locking space for the other two tests coming up and potentially looking at giving him time? I'm sure Brody's fine, but that's what I was thinking about going into this Italian test. If they can create some opportunity for some guys that can potentially fill that role, you know, it will be huge. And I agree with Bryn, I think Sam Kane will come back into the mix and start and get some good minutes under his belt.
Is Dalton close to pushing Sam for his position when Sam's back to full flight?
I think that's too hard a discussion. Like I think Dalton is physically ready and ready for Tier 1 Nation Test football. And I think the plan is with Sam is just to, you know, slowly progress him back into that Tier 1, you know, Nation football. So, you know, he's had a great opportunity against the US and now another opportunity against Italy. And then, you know, they'll probably reassess and make some decisions there, you know, heading into the Irish and French test weeks.
We've got a few minutes into the record. We might as well talk about Beauden Barrett versus Richie Moonga. is it the same team this week, Bryn, do you think, or is it a mix-up?
I think it's an opportunity to give Richie a go. And, you know, Beauden had an outstanding game on the weekend and, you know, played really, really well, and I think it's not going to be a form thing when it comes to Bodie, because look, he's been there for the majority of that rugby championship, played consistently well, and has had a lot of time. Whereas, you know, Richard did play that game against the Americans, and he got what he needed to get out of that. But I think it's a good time to be able to put Richie in there, and being able to have that combination with Davey as well. You know, possibly so, because I think the thing with Davey as well, that, you know, he had a game off, and then you come back and go forth. So I think it's important for, I think even Davey as well, to be able to get him in there. To be able to play some consistent minutes playing back-to-back. But in saying that, Quinn Tapia is knocking on the door, so whether Quinn gets an opportunity as well, you know, there could be a lot of changes. But I think Richie, yeah, could come into the fold, especially with how Bodie played on the weekend. Give Bodie a week off, or possibly off the bench, and then, you know, you even give the likes of Damo possibly coming into fullback as well and giving Geordie a rest. So there's just so many great players at the moment that probably need a little bit more game time, because you'd like to think that this probably Italian game is a probably your last chance on this tour to get a few guys with the opportunity to play those two test matches against Ireland and then the big one against France in a fortnight's time.
So you go back-to-back against Ireland and France, do you, Jipper, with your top team? Is that the way you play it out?
Again, I find that hard, because you've got to see how like banged up they are, see who's in the best physical shape. And I think that's the beauty of the squad at the moment, is the competition. So I think there might be a penciled-in team potentially for that 2 week slot, but it's just you know, two different styles, two different sort of intensity of the opposition. You know, like I just think they'll leave themselves the ability to adjust post that Irish test.
So the top 10-15 combo, we like to talk about it. Is it still Bodie and Geordie, or, you know, Richie and probably Damien were maybe it at the very start of the year? But what do you think, Bryn?
Oh, they can go either way. And if you look around, Bodie and Geordie, you know, they've been consistently in probably the last, you know, four test matches have been that 10 and 15 combination. And you know, the thing I like about Geordie is that the thing that he has, obviously he's a larger body compared to Damo. And look, this is no disrespect to Damo, but it's just different qualities that Geordie has, and the fact that he is taller, and with probably Ireland, with Conor Murray, even Jamison Gibson-Park and the nines that they do have there, that aerial game is possibly going to come. And even with the likes of the French as well, being able to kick off with DuPont. So he brings a really good aerial game for Geordie, and the fact that he's a goal kicker as well. A goal kick has been probably a massive positive for Geordie, and what he can add to that group, because he's been kicking consistently well when Bodie's been at 10. But you know, you've seen Richie and Damo. We saw that earlier as well, that combination. And what I do like about that combo is that they can both play at first receiver. And even if Richie takes it to the line, you know, Damo can step right up either side, open side or short side, and can be that first five receiver, or play as a first five like he does for the Chiefs or even with the All Blacks as well. So there is a bit of difference around that. And what you can do is if you have Damo at 15, you've got the ability then to be able to bring a winger midfielder on the bench as well, because Damo can cover 10 as well. So both can go well. But I think if it was to make a decision today, just based on the form of how the competition's gone and how the season's gone, you'd have to probably go with Bodie and Geordie at this stage.
You're in the same boat, Chip?
Yeah, look, I am, purely because of the tier one nation run they've had, and I suppose the control and form they're in. It's no different when Richie was in form and had more, I suppose, minutes in the saddle when Bodie came back from Japan. And I think they'll continue on with that. But, I mean, don't rule out more minutes for Richie in upcoming games. You know, like it was Bodie's big night, and he played deep, obviously, and played for the 80 minutes, and Richie came on as well. But I think, you know, you'll see him get more and more minutes if he does remain on the bench in the bigger tests as well.
I know we go on about this debate every single week, so maybe let's capture it. For me, I think it's more interesting than Mertz versus Spencer. Like, I can't remember kind of a rivalry for a position that's been this interesting in my time watching the All Blacks. But when you consider that, and we start talking about where Beauden Barrett, now All Black Test Centurion, World Cup winner, where he sits in the pantheon of number 10s in the history of New Zealand rugby, considering he's not always the first choice 10, where does he sit, Jipper? Where do you see him coming in that list?
Oh, man, I think he's right in the mix. And he's still got time to go. When I texted him during the week to wish him well for his 100th, I said, you've dedicated yourself to your craft and you'll be remembered as a great All Black for that. You know, he's made a lot of choices along the way to make him the very best player in the world a number of times and continues to be at that high level. And he's just not done. So it's a hard conversation to have at the moment because I still think there's more chapters to the story, just like there was for DC, and more, I suppose, excitement and fuel for this debate.
Where are you sitting, Brenner?
Yeah, it is. He's got a long way to go. The fact, you know, he's been here so long, considering he's played 100 test matches. But Chip's right. You know, he's right up there. You've got Dan Carter, who, you know, we don't need to talk about the achievements that he's have. Is just, you know, he could say arguably he's the greatest rugby player that's ever played in the world. So, but you know what Bodie has done. You know, he's a 2-time player of the year. You know, that's, you know, those are achievements that are done at a pretty high world class setup. So, you know, the fact that he's done that twice, I mean, he was playing 10 as well. You've got to add that into the discussion, and for the fact of longevity. Anytime you can play 100 test matches, whether it be, you know, for a time at 15 coming off the bench, but, you know, being able to play 100 test matches and that consistency of to be in that All Black group for a long period of time, that adds to it as well. But yeah, I think, look, the best is still to come of Bodie, and, you know, we're going to continue to have these discussions about him and Richie moving forward. But, you know, I think, you know, for having Richie there to be able to have that competition aspect, it's going to keep bringing the best out of Bodie. And look, if we can get test matches like we do on the weekend, and you've got Richie being able to be in behind him and to try and bring the best out of Bodie, and it goes vice versa both ways, it's only going to help New Zealand rugby and for our bid to win a World Cup in a couple of years' time.
I really enjoyed that wry grin from you, Jip, then when DC was announced as the greatest player of all time. I'm actually in that boat. I'm in the DC as the best rugby player I've ever seen boat. Where do you stand on this?
On Dizzy?
Yeah. Is he the greatest rugby player ever been?
Him or Richie, I reckon. Like, he's definitely there, but let's not forget the hard graft that goes in to provide that beautiful ball to be played off.
The forwards lay the platform for the greatest rugby player of all time. So, you know, well, let's
record
it.
Record it at all. It's a hard argument, but I'm a Ford, mate. Of course I'm going to back Richie.
I did say arguably. I forgot to mention the old great Richie McCaw. He's right up there as well. So it's hard to go past those two. Just thank God they're Kiwis. So.
It's one of them. It's one of them.
Two Kiwis. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's Dan. And the reason it's for Dan is because he did turnovers. He'd make his tackles. He'd run the ball. He kicked goals. You know, he kicked field position. There's a few things that Dan Carter did that Richie McCaw never had the chance to do, I suppose, because of his position. But Dan could do literally every single thing on the field, I thought, bar, you know, throwing into a line-out or backing a scrum.
I'd love you to find a clip of one of his turnovers. I'd be interested in that.
They're there. I'm gonna fish them out. We'll get some of the boys onto it. We'll see what we can do.
Please do. Please do.
I've got a couple of vivid memories of them later on in games at times when, you know, there's a few tired boys out there, but There definitely were some.
Richie probably made the tackle and got it up for him.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Desi would be first to point towards Richie.
Yeah,
it's good banter.
Yes, that banter is something that's been going on in and around this game, because the yellow card for Nepal Laulala was an interesting call. A lot of Welsh people I've seen online are saying that was a red. The referees decided mitigating circumstances, yellow, as the player buried his head into his forearm. Where do you sit on this, Bryn?
Yeah, look, frustrated would probably be the word that I'd use, because look, as a rugby player, yes, we've got an understanding around, like, it's not common sense, because like, you've got to go the letter of the law, and by the letter of the law, you know, his forearm or his kind of shoulder went into his head. But at the same time, as a rugby player, you think, like, the guy's ducking his head right down at a low height, and Nepo's actually tried to, like, just go through a low technique tackle. Like, if you talk around head highs at it from previous send-offs, it's been, you know, you've got the tackle technique wrong, and it's just been able to go up, and you've got probably been sent off for the right reason. But, you know, there's nothing that Nepal Laulala in that situation could have done to be able to stop that situation there. So, yes, I understand that, you know, there's going to be a yellow card, and they talked about it and went through that. But for me as a rugby player, it's really hard to be able to get behind that decision, because I think there's only so much that the tackler can do to be able to get that right. You know, Jip or Ross, you see that and you look at that example, there's nothing that Nepal Laulala could have done to be able to try and get that any better. So do you start rewarding? Do you have to, you kind of, for that kind of situation, it's a unique situation, but those kind of ones that happen, common sense has to prevail. But I know we're trying to look after, there's a law that's going to be able to put in place, and it's going to probably, if that did happen, then it's going to open up the door for other avenues for it to happen in other games. But for me, as just a rugby player, I found it really frustrating. I could understand the reason behind it, but Nepal Laulala couldn't have done anything better or anything more to try and nullify that and get that wrong at all.
So yeah, it's just a penalty for the shot to the head?
Say again?
So you just make it a penalty for the shot to the head? Is that essentially what
yeah.
you do?
Yeah, so for me, it's just a penalty, because I know that there's obviously laws in place, and there's been other examples where that isn't the case, and so there's been a yellow card offence. But for that one there, you're just thinking, yes, he has hit his head. But at the same time, look, he's putting his head down, putting it right down. So, like, where's he supposed to go? So, for me personally, if they just walked away then and said, look, this is just a penalty, because there's obviously factors at hand that is probably a little bit common sense thinking, then they would have got that right. But again, I can understand why they've done it. It won't be the last one that we talk around. But for me personally, I was left frustrated with that yellow card.
When I watched the game, I found it interesting that the yellow card was given for not wrapping. It wasn't anything to do with the head contact. So it was saying he was basically tucking his shoulder and not attempting to wrap in the tackle. But the irony is I think as he's going to wrap, that's when he makes contact with the head. And that's why it looks like it doesn't look like he's trying to wrap. That's stupid as it sounds. I watched it a couple of times, but he hits his head and it tucks the arm back in. But for me, if you look at Wallabies hooker Fiangar, he does this grass cut and gets penalised for it all the time. And that's the only real option that Nepo has. Like, that's a low position. He's in a pretty low position where he is. So the other thing is he's got to leave his feet and grass cut, which isn't allowed either. So look, it was a tough situation for the ref to be in. But you see contact with the head. I felt like they brought into mitigating circumstances. I don't think if we were this time last year, that could have been a red. I mean, it touched the head and it puts you in dangerous territory. I felt like the way he said the yellow card was for no wrapping was probably surprising. I thought it would have been the head mitigated down from a red to a yellow. But it just shows, I suppose, there is still this confusion in the game for all of us. We all interpreted it differently.
Those two things, I suppose, just go hand in hand, don't they? Like the head and the wrapping. At such a short period of time, when the player bounces off another player's body, you can't really say whether one thing's worse than the other, because it's just instantaneous, right, Jip?
But that's what I'm trying to say is, like, Nepo is going to get penalised either way. Because he dips, he doesn't get low enough, and he hits his head as he's going to wrap, or he does the Fanga style, he's going to get penalised. You know, like if you get that dipping motion and you're a big man like Nepo, it sounds like I'm making excuses for him, but he'll be, you know, rubbing the grass with his face. He was pretty low. He was definitely dipping. But look, from my point of view, as soon as there's contact with the head, you knew it was either going to be red or yellow, not just a penalty. And I thought the mitigating circumstances were taken into account and consistent with a lot of other things we've seen. It was just when he said it was for not wrapping, I was confused.
So it was a better place than last year, but still not perfect.
Well, it's not a perfect area, is it?
Yeah.
There's three of us here and we saw it all differently. You know, like, as long as it's consistent on the night, this is what I always say with referee decisions, as long as it's consistent on the night over the 80, it's about, you know, that's part of the game is how good you are at adjusting to the ref and finding where the boundaries are and where the boundaries aren't. And that's what makes you a better player or a better team. So that's part of it, is that 80-minute window. And if there's consistency across that, I'll never complain, because you just can't expect a replication. Just like as a player, you can't expect a replication. When you play 10 out of 10, you're most probably not going to do 10 out of 10 next week unless you're Richie McCaw or Dan Carter. So that's what I'm trying to get at, is that 80 minutes he was consistent. So that's the rules you play under in that sense.
We were lucky it just wasn't a game decider, I suppose, you know, in that kind of nature of game. In another game, it could become an even bigger incident.
But even if it is, it's still consistent within that 80. And some players will be smart enough to know that on the attacking sense and start dropping their height into contact to get the reward as well. So again, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's a skill. It's part of being a world-class player to adjust on the run to referee decisions.
So you, in that situation, almost just have to let him get over the gain line and collar him down or something, you know, rather than being in front and trying to get the hit on.
Well, I just think we're using a prop. Like, if that was a Lucy or something, they'd get low enough. And the All Blacks have shown their tackle technique is a low chop, get access for the turnover and the breakdown for the hunt. So you'd just change positions. You'd move your big fellas in tighter to the ruck or something. I don't know. But I don't know what that answer is. That's what I'm saying. It's up to the player or the players to adjust on the run.
How do Wales bounce back from this? Obviously, they've got a lot of players coming in and they've got the Springboks next week who've, you know, been pretty impressive in recent times. Bryn, what do Wales do? Do you just make the wholesale changes and go with it? Or do you say, hey, these guys got some experience last week and we'll stick with a couple of them?
Oh, look, they'll bring in some guys that are going to come in to be able to bolster their squad and their team. And, you know, there's obviously a few injuries for their test match against the All Blacks. But, you know, you look at the likes of Basham, you know, who I thought was best on park for Wales. And anytime we can bring a young guy in that hasn't experienced footy at that level and he can end up playing so well against the All Blacks, you know, that's only going to set him well. Or guys like that play in that kind of game and play well, it's only going to upskill them moving forward. So look, I think guys getting that kind of experience is going to be great. And you know, the fact that they did play New Zealand, it's going to hold them well moving forward, but it is going to be a different style that they are going to face in the South Africans. So I think probably the experience that they had against the All Blacks, and then when they are going to play South Africa, it's going to be a little bit of a different style possibly from what we've probably seen in the British and Irish Lions and in the Rugby Championship. They are going to bring more of a kicking element, so they might be able to change in and around that, and their attacking brand might come a little bit easier than it did on the weekend. But no, I think they did really, really well at some things in the game. Their set piece is one thing that they'll probably need to sew up, especially with the South Africans and how well they are at their set piece. You know, they've got to get their line out right, and especially their scrums. Just going back to our boys, you know, I thought Joe Moody and Nepo Lalale in big times in those games, the scrum penalties through their eight were really crucial in stunting the momentum of the Welsh. So I think set piece is going to be a big key for the Welsh moving forward against the South Africans, who against us did really, really well defending us. But then at the same time, they've probably got an aerial attack coming as well through Faf de Klerk and Andre Pollard through 10.
I'll just add in there, Cody Taylor's in that front row too. You know, you just forget the hooker there doing that good work up front. Brunny's a crusader too, mate.
I can't keep talking about crusaders, mate.
Mate, stop forgetting the hookers.
I wanted to get Will Jordan in there, mate, but I couldn't. Sorry, carry on.
You'll get there. For me, it's tactically. So it's what shifts they need to make in terms of their tactics. And by that, you know, Bryn sort of alluded to the set piece. That'll be one, and making sure they can win their ball. But they played a lot of rugby between their 2 40 metres, between the 2 40 metres. And that's quite energy-sapping stuff. And they chanced their arm. And they didn't really adjust their attacking style to that, I suppose, line speed pressure of the All Blacks. I mean, if you use Will Jordan's one when he pretty much tackled the midfielder coming from the wing. And I think tactically they could have gone to their attacking kicks there. Maybe, you know, Anscombe did do one wipers kick, but it was just a bit too far. But something like that to get outside of Rushdie, because that's what they're going to see again against South Africa. So not sapping so much of the energy with the crash and bash, you know, 50 or 40 metres or 60 metres out from your own line. Go back to your tactical kicking or your attacking kicking and put the ball back on top of them, because they kicked 22 times 28 to the All Blacks. So I don't think we would have expected that last week. So I think using their boot a lot more will be one thing. And then obviously a big focus on skill execution. As we've stated, they had opportunities aplenty, and they didn't quite nail it through, obviously, errors, overthrows, or penalties at scrum time. So that's the big thing. But I think that kicking and not playing so much in and around that midpoint and wasting energy, because let's not forget, Wayne Pivac said they fell off a cliff, and playing extra rucks 50, 40, 60 metres out from your try line and you're getting crashed and bashed through rush D, to me, as a forward, I'd be looking at my team going, get this thing in front of me, mate, because we're just going nowhere here. And I think
it's the lead.
Priestland came on and put a grubber in behind straight away. Mm. And he obviously saw it from the bench, put it straight in behind to try and slow the line speed, to change the pitches, manipulate the pendulum, as Bryn talks about, to make it a little bit harder for the midfielders and the guys close to the ruck to rush. They have to chance around. But Will Jordan couldn't come from the wing to tackle a midfielder because their kick could come. So I think they just brought that into their game too late. They scored a try off it. So, you know, and TJ Perenara was trying things where he was just flying out of the line just before half time. So again, that means there's kick space in behind. So there was there's those tactics things that I think they can work on most rather than personnel. I think their personnel's there. They won the Six Nations. They're a good enough team to win against Springboks, but they'll have to bring their A game in terms of their tactics.
Yeah, it's very
those spot tackles out wide were pretty good from the All Blacks, weren't they, Bryn?
Yeah, just before we get to that, Ross, I think it's really important as well, Joe. I think you look at the Australians and the kind of movements that they made against the All Blacks, and yes, they had two test matches and they got to be off a couple of test matches to be able to figure that out. But I think you are right, Joe, because I think, you know, with Wayne, you know, Wayne, he wants to play rugby, he wants to be on top of teams and be able to build a lot of phases. But, you know, if you get that wrong against South Africa, who have some really good jacklers, pretty much their whole forward pack can steal the ball. So, you know, if you play that 7 to 8 phases around that kind of no man's land around the 40 metre mark to 50 metre mark, you know, Andre Pollard's then going to kick one from 50 and he's going to be able to accumulate those scoreboard pressure. So I think being able to get that kick balance right, the Australians did it really, really well when they played the South Africans twice and they got that right along with their phase play shape. So I think they have the ability to attack, but I think it's really important that when they do get down into those opportunities, like, you know, the 37th and 39th minute of their set piece, and they can get that right, then there might be 7 points instead of 0 points. So, I think that's going to be really important. And then coming back to your point on that one, Ross, yeah, I think it's really good. You know, if you look around face play shape, and it's almost like it's spooking. You're spooking someone and saying that you're there in that space you've taken away that space. You know, if you're good enough to be able to, you know, there could be a possibility of a bridge pass and attacking kick in behind. But yeah, I think it's really good. Whether it was TJ, Will Jordan did it a little bit on the weekend as well, being able to get into that space. And what it does, it gets you in the eye line of the 10 or the first receiver, whoever's got that ball. So, you know, let's just say, for example, you know, you've got your three forwards at the front, they pull it out the back to the first five. And if you're in, as soon as you get that ball and you get that as a 10 and you're looking up at the defense and you're seeing a winger nice and high, you're thinking, oh, the space isn't going to be able to get there. So I think then it's really important if you do see that, it's on your outside to be able to communicate the next time that happens and saying, look, the 14's coming a little bit higher, the 9 who's going to be out, who might be out there, is coming to try and spook. So the solution for around that is to be able to do a bridge pass and attacking kick, like, you know, Bowden Barrett, this isn't an example of a face play, but, you know, Bowden Barrett put that kick in nice and early on to Rico, because the fullback was central towards the post and there was space there. So I think it's just going to be an improvement for the Welsh to be able to get those comms in and the action words into their players, because the space is going to be there, and the South Africans are really good at being able to get those guys to staying high and taking away that space, whether it be with a winger, and does it really, really well, and sometimes Faf de Klerk fights in and around that that edge side as well.
Bryn, you mentioned, I suppose, adjusting the rush D. If we want to give a picture to the audience, is probably Anton Leonard Brown's try. Okay, if you can't get the kick away and you can't find that edge, you watch Tupou Vaa'i keeps his hips square and down the ground.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And he gives the ball, as he's still looking at the defender, out the back to Bodie. Bodie doesn't get spooked by that fly defender. Mm. He runs a little bit and basketball passes it over to Reeks. And then the other guy's flying at Reeks, and Reeks has kept his depth. He knows it's probably not on for him. And he just gives that sleight of hand to Geordie, and then Geordie onto ALB. Now, that is through the experience they've probably had with the Springboks and used to trying to they actually were probably – that was the one thing they said when they came out of the Springboks, is they were disappointed with some of their option taking under that rushed defence. And I think we saw it on that one, that they're learning and growing, just, you know, holding their feet, really sucking and engaging those tight defenders in, you know, on Tupou Vaa'i's square hips and ball out the back. Can go unnoticed and unappreciated, but, you know, not in the All Black environment, but just from people watching. But he holds about four defenders in there to create the space and time for Bodie to see the rusher and not be spooked by it, and then find the space where it is. And then obviously Reeks' skill set's pretty pretty special to get that ball away. But if you're not going to kick it, that's the way, is not get spooked. You've got to believe there's a way around it.
Yeah. I think on that as well, Jip, to be able to get through that rush defense, there's just a lot of parts that have to that go through that. Like, if we've talked around the Australians and their kind of growth around having the animation, getting that down ball runner out the back, and then you've got Rovers in and around. So, you know, as a defense line, if you're seeing that kind of animation, you almost might pause a little bit because you don't know who you're going to get. And if you look on that example there, Jit, with Tupou Vaa'i, Richie Mwanga runs in a nice hard line, and East Bodie, he pulls it a little bit and then gives it over the top. But what Richie does there is it holds that defense as well. If that's a flat four lines or flat four people, it's really easy to make decisions through that. So I think to get that rush defense, there's so many things within your face play shape that you have to get right. You've got to be able to ask questions for that defense to put them into this to be able to second guess, or else you get the likes of like what happened earlier in the rugby championship with the All Blacks, Sevi Reese being able to get those bridge passes if there's no animation, pretty similar to what the Australians and what we've talked about in their growth in their faceplate shape.
So would that be the thing that Ian Foster's happiest about, Jip, or is there a bunch of other things on the list that you think he would have been happiest about with the progress from this game?
Look, I think he'll be really wrapped with the way they orchestrated the win by the physical work they did in that first 40 and just chipped away. And they obviously had a plan, as I mentioned, about Sam Whitelock's plan to take the threes and get that scoreboard pressure. But, you know, we've seen that same strategy and then not been able to ratchet it up. I think he'll be really, really happy with that last 20, 25 minutes and what they did there. And it wasn't just individual brilliance. It was a team effort, apart from probably Will Jordan's try. But I still think Ethan Blackadder played a role in that by getting back and just creating a little bit more space for him. Outside of that, it was guys just working really hard off the ball. As Bryn alluded to, running great lines that make defenders make decisions, that makes the guy with the ball's job easier. And I think that is a big growth from where, that rush D had the All Blacks against the Springboks.
Shall we move on to the test match of the weekend then, shall we? The Black Ferns. 100th test. It was a big occasion for them, but it didn't go very well against England. 43-12 was the final result. You kind of feel they're a little bit set up to fail here and that they haven't played test football in a couple of years. The English team know each other very, very well. They're playing at home. This was always going to be a big challenge for them, Jip.
Yeah, it definitely was. And let's not forget, a lot of opportunities for them to prepare for that test were taken away from them. They had tests against the Wallaroos that would have been great, but they obviously got cancelled due to COVID. They had other camps that had to be cancelled, and I think it probably showed the most in the defence and the lack of connection, and they're probably still embedding a system, although, nine debutants are still, trying to find their way in the system and connect with the players around them. And there were just gaping holes at time for the English players to run through. Or there was a stacked blind side of defenders that were marking, a little amount of players. And then, obviously the English went wide or open. And because they didn't marry up those numbers and work around into the open side, they were left short and some good hole running by the English. So I think that was probably the biggest example of, that they were underdone. But I think everyone expected them to be underdone. As I've just alluded to, they've had test matches removed for a number of years now. And what will be good is they'll be able to learn and rectify. We've seen with this coaching group and this leadership group that they won't be burnt twice. And I think there'll be a big shift in the accuracy and defence. Because I thought on attack, especially in that first 10 minutes, they were running hot and they were good again straight off the after the break. So I think if they can sort out their D, it'll be a lot tighter contest. And probably their kick strategy. I felt like, and I might be wrong, but I felt like the player that kicked the ball kicked because they thought it was right to kick rather than manipulating the D to kick on their terms as a team. And you can sort of see that in the chase line at times. And maybe they kicked and because the winger didn't call that space, they're not chasing. Do you know what I mean? So felt like because there was no comms and nothing on due to the nature of that rush D from England, we sort of just aimlessly kicked in the kick strategy. Mm. So I think the defence and the kick strategy, if they can sharpen that up, it'll provide a lot less opportunity for the English. And then I felt like their attack was, pretty powerful at times and probably a natural instinct and the one thing that they probably don't need to focus on as much this week.
Mm. The English, though, you've seen those tries, Brenner. There was some really, really great execution from the English, particularly coming in from fullback.
Yeah, she was outstanding. Ellie Kildun. Yeah, she was electric. I saw a couple of her ball in hand, very electric, and had great footwork. And I think the biggest thing around that, if you're talking around defensive pressure and not getting it right, and if you're gonna give ladies like that plenty of opportunities to be able to have one on one at least, man on man or woman on woman, you're gonna come off second best. So I think it's important for the Blackfords moving forward. You talk around cohesion. You can really own those things around communication. So no doubt they'll go away and they'd want to be able to rectify that and get in those communication, whether that be from a winger to a centre or a centre to a loose forward or whoever the connection is there. Because if you're not on the same page, you're going to see, breaks in the line and a lot of line breaks. So the good thing around that is that they've got an opportunity to be able to play another game to get this right. So, Black Ferns team doesn't lose very often. And, it was it was a centenary test around the Black Ferns, and there was a lot of probably emotional feelings going into their week. So it should be. It was an awesome occasion for a lot of women in that team and previously that had put a lot into that jersey. So they'll be hurting. And I know that coaching group will be hurting as well. So, there's a lot of learnings through that. But if anything, I expect them to bounce back and rectify a few things that they can control, as well as their set piece. Now, those are things, Chip, you talk around the parity around your forward pack. And, you know, if you don't get that right, it's pretty hard to be able then to be able to win a game and go on your own terms and build pressure through that way. So it's going to be good learning for those girls, and hopefully they can have a long, hard week getting that bone deep kind of prep and review of what they probably will do, and then being able to make those learnings and shifts coming up very, very soon.
Some set piece struggles there, Jipper. The lineouts were a real issue, and the English were able to just basically go to kicking it out whenever they wanted to because they felt like they could get the ball back. Is it easy to get that lineout sorted in a week?
It is. If you make it, sort of simple changes. I feel one of the easiest things that you can control is getting to your lineout first and taking your tempo options. So if you've got a high work rate and you get there and get set, even if you're coming from a blind side, you can still get up and move into your lineup that way and take tempo. And if you can't take tempo, then the most simple way is to have a movement structure that leads to three or four options so that it's always looking like the same movement. So it makes the opposition think, oh yeah, I'm in the race here, and they go up, but then you do one more slip or another sort of movement that pops up somewhere else. And then the next time you can go up where they thought you're going to go up, and you've got a plan for what you're going to go through, and you're wanting them to think it's the same movement every time, but you know you've got three or four options that you can end up at. But I think the biggest thing they can control is either get to that ball and play quick throw-ins, or get there first and take your tempo. That's the easiest. Get in, get out. And they like playing at that tempo speed, the Black Ferns, with ball in hand, so it would suit them.
I thought as well, Jip, on that as well. Like, you know, if you're talking about those tempos, getting there really quick to be able to get them in behind and not being set. You know, you look at Ayesha, you know, with how good with ball in hand she was. You know, she's just a little pocket rocket, and every time that she seemed to get the ball, she was able to get over the advantage line. You know, even getting an overthrow, getting to be able to get her into the game and getting over the advantage line, then to be able to get into your attack structures through that. Because we've talked around a lot, whether you look at Karevi or that kind of transition phase in the men's rugby, being able to win that battle there. If you get the likes of our outside backs, being able to get them into that position where it could possibly be a one-on-one with a side tackle, with a hooker or a seven or a ten, whoever's out there in that first channel. So, yeah, ways through that or specials to be able to get a bit of confidence for that set piece. But, you know, no doubt Growler will be getting them in for this next week and trying to suss out a few plans in place to rectify that their set piece issues on the weekend.
Well, let's look forward to this weekend. Obviously, the Black Ferns have got their rematch against England. We've got a few other big games. We've got the Wallabies versus Scotland, and the Wallabies camp has found itself in a little bit of a pickle with, I suppose, Samu Karevi, Quade Cooper, you know, pulling out late out of this tour, the players themselves voicing the fact that they wish they were there. They're just constrained by the contracts they've got in Japan. Where do the Wallabies sit heading into this Scottish game? Bryn, how do you feel about their chances there, considering how important Quade Cooper and Samu Karevi have been to the way that they've played this year?
Oh, it's a massive loss for them. But at the same time, you look around the All Blacks and you want to build depth and competition within the squad. You know, not too sure I know Noah's going to be able to go over there, whether he's had enough time to be able to play in that test match. But look, I think it's just the next, with Dave Rennie, I can imagine him as the next person up. Next person up to be able to stake your claim for position, to be able to play well, and being able to grow towards that whole India tour. Because look, even though they played against Japan and you know they didn't play as well as they previously had, but they got the job done and did a few things that they wanted to. So I think it's a good opportunity for some other guys to be able to come in. And yes, Karevi, you know, Corabee, now Cooper, McMahon, those guys that aren't going to be there. But I can imagine that David Rennie, even through the Rugby Championship, a lot of guys came in through that kind of rugby championship format and played some really good minutes around that. So they have had the experience of being able to put guys in there and been able to perform and still win test matches. It just makes it a little bit harder with the experience that, you know, Quade Cooper and the likes of Karevi have brought into that squad. But, you know, they're confident at the stage because they've won test matches, and it's not like they haven't lost a couple of games and they're trying to find a bit of confidence. You know, these guys are in red hot form considering with how many test matches they've won back to back. So they'll see it as a challenge, and I can imagine Dave Rennie will be really in and around that group trying to get the messaging right and then being able to say, it's next person up, you know, it won't even make it an issue around it. So I expect it really to be a real tight test match though. You know, Scotland have did well in there. Always hard at home. So it's going to be a good challenge for the Wallabies and the next guys off the carry the rank. It's their job to put in a good performance and continue this winning success with the likes of Quade Cooper, Kirevi and Corabetti when they were in there during the Rugby Championship.
I just think the Wallabies, we've spoken at length about them growing in their knowledge of their system and the style of play they want to, and I don't think it revolves around three or four players. I think there's been a real shift in terms of how they want to play the game, but also how much they know. It's almost ingrained in them now. You know, they're a team that likes to hold on to the ball, break teams down, but they can also kick positionally. And James O'Connor certainly can step up and play that role. He's played fantastic all year. Yes, coming back from an injury, but, you know, I don't think, you know, he's had a couple of runs off the bench, so he'll step up. I do think Samu Kerevi is a bigger hole than others, but I think the fact that he's been in and around that environment, in and around that young centre group, I think there is enough there that they would have taken from him to bring into their game. But watching Scotland play Tonga on the weekend, it will be no easy feat, man. They were really effective. Their set piece and maul drive was good, but some of their strike plays and their bodies in motion, and by bodies in motion, I mean there's a number of bodies coming to that D line, and you have to make a decision. And as a defender, you've got to make a decision, but also the ball carrier's got to make the right decision. And man, they were just picking them off. Kyle Stain, I think it was, scored four tries, but it was just through those lines that Bryn talks about making defenders make decisions, changing the angle and creating that space out the back, or giving it to the guy changing the angle. They were slick. They were really slick because Tonga started well and they picked away with a couple of threes. But man, every time they got within, you know, 30 or 20 odd metres, they were scoring points and making it look easy. But it wasn't as easy as they made it.
Moving on to the Japan game against Ireland, I suppose it's interesting that Japanese players are available for Japan, but not necessarily for Australia. I have to do more research into that, I suppose. Actually, thinking of it, it is the interesting evolution of that league, because when you look at that league right now, in the past we hadn't really worried about players being selected out of that league. The league's got to a strength now where quality players are being selected for international football, and maybe we need the Japanese league to better align with those test match windows, because, you know, all the other leagues are having to align with the November window, the July window. Now we're in a position where the Japanese league isn't aligning with it, and more top quality players are heading there as their number one place to get income. Any comment from anyone on that?
Well, I think that's the key probably point of that is the number one value for the player and the team employing them. And it might, you know, might have been part of the discussion in signing the contract. You don't know. They might have said this is the expectation. This is the contract, but this is the expectation. And they've called them on that. We don't know. We're not privy to it. I certainly don't think they'll be bending the rules. It's obviously a contractual obligation, the way I read it anyway.
The message from Japan against Australia is we're right in this. So are Japan a legit chance to beat Ireland and Dublin?
I just think both sides have got a little bit of unknown about them. You know, having not been able to play for a bit, you know, like Japan we saw against Aussie, and that was a great showing. But, you know, it's one thing to do that at home and then to go to Dublin and win a test match, and the Irish will be up for it. They've been sitting there waiting. So there's pros and cons to both sides, and there's a little bit of an unknown for me to be able to be as definitive as I usually am. So I'm excited by this test match, and I think, man, if Japan could do something special, I think it would really spice up international rugby. It would bring... You know, whenever they do these big one-off wins, you know, it's big talking points in the game of sport in general. Not just rugby people talk it, but everyone starts talking it. So I think a victory away from home in Ireland would be huge for our game as a whole.
Yeah, bit of fun. And outside of World Cups as well, you know, like the big ones seem to come at the World Cup. So to get them more consistent, I suppose, across the board is the next step for Japan, Bryn, in between those big tournaments.
Yeah, it is. Anytime you can play against you know, a top-tier nation away from home, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, it's only going to be able to make you better as a team. So, You know, I think they, you know, you look at that 77th minute against Australia, they were in that game, and it wasn't, if it wasn't for Rob Valentini making that steal to be able to put to ice the game, you know, well, Japan were right into that game. So I think the improvement for them moving forward is that, you know, knowing that it's going to be in France in 2023, and the conditions could be a little bit more different than they're accustomed to being at home, being a lot hotter and dry ball. So what I did like in Japan and seeing that, and probably they didn't get the execution right with the contestable aspect, but they've got that game to be able to do that because, you know, it could be, you know, don't know what the weather's going to be like in Ireland. It could be a little bit wet, and we know how much of a tempo mindset that the Japanese do have. So I did see that in that game, they had the likes of their box kick being able to have it set up really quickly. So if they feel like they're not going anywhere, at least they've got their mindset of to be able to look, we're not going anywhere. We might put a contestable up off 9, or they might be able to do it at off 10. So I was really happy to be able to see that, because knowing that you'd go to the Northern Hemisphere, having those that in your toolbox, and having to go from plan A to plan B, and that kind of we talked around that no man zone around the 40s, and in your exit area, I think it's gonna be real crucial for Japan moving forward. But then I think as well, their set piece, you know, having that parity in set piece is always going to be something really important going into going into Ireland, because look, no doubt, if you're looking at, if you're at Ireland, you want to really dominate that set piece here through scrum and line out. And you know, if Japan can run at that kind of 85, 90% and nail moments with that set piece and big moments, and win a line out or win a scrum when they need to, then it could be in a very similar situation like they were against Australia. They were in that game for the last, you know, where there would be the last couple of minutes, and then, you know, that's when you can try and win a test match instead of it being previously where it might be a one-sided game against Ireland.
I think the other key is the Maldi as well. That's where they probably lost the game. That was Aussie's last try, and that'll be big for them on this tour, is they really need to aim up and have a plan around how they're going to stop these driving mauls, because the opportunities will come. That's just rugby. And then I've got to make sure that they don't make it as easy as they did for the Wallabies at the end of that game.
And I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised moving forward, seeing in this Ireland game something different or something out of the box with Tony Brown, because I think they need to have a little bit of luck and something a little bit different outside the box moving forward. And I can see you grinning. I'm not looking for a contract, Jipper. I'm not looking for a contract. But you know, I do know Tony Brown with his time at the with the Maldives, that he's got a great brain in being able to think and do something a little bit different. So I can imagine him and Scotty Hansen and the old trusted trio will be thinking of doing something a little bit different, maybe, Jipper.
100%, mate. I'm with you. I'm with you. If they need a resource coach around the line out and stuff, I'm their man too. Let's get us both.
Yeah.
You've given up on joining Dave Rennie, have you? You're gonna switch tacks.
He doesn't need me, mate.
Tony Brown, the ink is drying on the contract there for you, Bryn.
Just keep hammering. Just keep hammering, man. Just keep chipping away. Keep chipping away.
Why don't we move on to some predictions? Obviously, let's start with that game, actually. Ireland for both of you, or anyone picking an upset?
Ireland for me. I just think at home conditions, travel, yeah. I mean, it's weighted in their favour. It'll be close, though.
Ireland for me.
Okay. England Tonga is probably pretty straightforward.
Yes. I did like what I saw from
13-5.
Tonga. They had a plan. They took the threes from long range. They definitely had a plan about how they wanted to play, but defensively, they just couldn't keep up with the pace of it.
Springboks or Wales, Bryn?
I'm gonna go Springboks. I'm gonna go Springboks for the fact that they're so dominant with their set piece, and I'd probably think that they're really gonna try and attack that set piece area just for what they saw in the All Blacks game. And look, Wales have people that will be able to come back, and hopefully not too sure how Alanwyn Jones is going to be, but you know, with him leaving in that 20th minute, it kind of just you know, having that kind of experience and look around, his line out leadership was probably lost. But yeah, I think that kind of set piece parity that the Springboks did really well against the All Blacks, they'll be able to go through that, looking at scrum penalties, the line out maul, and really taking their legs away from the Welsh, and then you know, Fufta Klerk and Andre Pollard, their kicking game and putting them under pressure, and also their defensive line speed pressure. I'd like to think that they'll get it back to when they played the British Irish Lions in that kind of 90% the high 80s defensive pressure.
I tell you what, I think the Welsh will be men possessed. Like, can we just give a round of applause for the Welsh fans? Like, didn't that stadium just look amazing full and the atmosphere there? And no doubt it's what's facing the Springboks again. But I think they'll be too good. They're too, you know, big a threat at set piece. We saw the troubles, and I know that players will be coming back and into the Welsh side, but again, that's a lot of moving parts, whereas the Springboks have been set, waiting and planning for this test match, and I think they'll be fairly clinical. And I think they're finding a way of playing in multiple sets of conditions, and they have a way out and a style that they can, you know, I suppose, run between alternate ways of playing to give them the best ability to win more test matches, and I see it being no different this weekend.
Just on that, Jip, just on that, you look around the All Blacks, right? So when they played the British and Irish Lions, South Africa, they had a style. They just wanted to obviously kick, being able to put them under pressure through, you know, midfield bombs or a kick out in their kind of attacking zone. And obviously when they played the All Blacks, they changed it up just a little bit. They went it through a little bit, especially in that last test match, being able to, when they did have that inside that 22-metre zone, they knew that they just weren't able to give that ball back to the All Blacks because they would be able to get out and been able to let off that pressure. So for me, I'd really be interested to see if they're going to go back to that kind of kicking style and going back to like they did against the British and Irish Lions, or taking the learnings of how they were able to, like you said, Jip, go through that kicking zone, been able to have that kicking mindset, but then able to play with the ball and then been able to have their set piece as well. Because I think that's the recipe for the South Africans that I'd like to see them. Like they did in that last test match against the All Blacks. I look at that and that's, you know what, that's the blueprint right there. And it's going to be interesting because I know they played the All Blacks. They had to play like that to do because of how we are as a country and how we play. They had to kind of force their hand to play like that. But whether they do that against the top tier nations moving forward, it'd be quite interesting to see if they do that.
I think it'll be based on conditions they face. They'll make those decisions on the night. If they open the roof and it's wet, I think we'll probably see more of a British and Irish Lions. If they shut it, give them a chance, you'll see more of that style that we saw against Argentina in South Africa. And the way they played in that second test versus the All Blacks.
Wallabies versus Scotland. We've done a bit of chat on them already, but where does this go? The Wallabies get the win despite Scotland being pretty impressive, Bryn?
Man, I'm actually going to go for an upset here. I'm going to go Scotland. Yeah, I'm going to go Scotland. And look, it's not to say it has nothing really to do with the Australians, because we've been advocates for the Australians in probably the last, you know, 5-6 Test matches. So, but I think just for the fact you talk around Samu Kerivi, and like I know the other guys, you know, Ike Taua's played really well. You know, Hunter Paisami's there, and you know, maybe even some other players might be able to come in there. But I just think with how Scotland played on the weekend, and yes, it was against Tonga, but I think it's just going to be a different challenge. It's going to be different conditions, being a different place, and. Yeah, I just think Scotland will probably, this is just, I'm picking it, they might just make an upset here and probably win, you know, a 3.1, very, very close. But yeah, I can just see Scotland possibly bringing up an upset this week against the Aussies.
Yeah, look, for me, this is a big testing point. Like, I know everyone's like, oh, I wish the Aussies could have played the All Blacks, but this is their big pressure point. And getting a win in this test match is huge. And that's why I'll back Dave Rennie and the crew to get that job done, because I think they'll know how important it is for them as a group, but also their fan base. And I think a lot of that is, that's what they're playing for, is their people back home. And they're utilising that as a galvanising tool. And I think, you know, yeah, there's been a bit of changes, more so in the back line. But I think the platform that forwards are putting on still enables the guys that are coming in to replace those senior men the opportunity to exploit the Scottish. But it'll be close, there's no doubt. But I'm just backing the coaching group of the Wallabies and their leadership group to understand how important this test match is.
France-Argentina, is this a difficult one to pick, Jipper?
I've been thinking about this one a lot, and I suppose if you heard Ledesma's comments about the side and where they're at mentally, probably not, unless there's been a big turnaround in that and they've got away from rugby and had a really good freshen up. But they have been on the road a long time, and I suppose it sort of alluded to the fact that they're potentially overcooked as such, and not getting the best out of themselves, which is always a hard place to be. And I think the French are preparing for that test at the end against the All Blacks, and they'll know how important it is to get their ducks in a row so that they can execute on that night.
Yeah, I think for me, I think, you know, the French are probably, you know, playing this week and knowing that the All Blacks are to come. But I guess for me, what I want to see from Argentina is, we talked around whether it be they played against the Wallabies, New Zealand or South Africa, their discipline was shocking. You know, we talked around, you can't give, you know, these top 10 nations opportunities time and time again. And, you know, there were sin binnings, and you talked around even their set piece as well, with their line-out drives, you know, had a couple of guys getting sent off and moments like that. And so for me, you know, if they can take away those penalties, and there were spurts in those rugby championship games that when they were on top of teams, we saw the flair, you know, very similar to what the French do, you know, or the offloads, being able to go forward and being able to build pressure and scoring tries. But, you know, if they don't get that discipline right, like they did in the rugby championship, then it's going to be a long day against the French. But, you know, I think the French will win this game. Even if the Argentinians do get that right, I still think the French, they'll have too much firepower, and yeah, will be really, really wanting to gear up for that All Blacks in, you know, a couple of weeks' time.
I think it's just as key for the French to win this game, like I said, with the Wallabies, to put a stake in the ground, because there was that inconsistency over the Six Nations where everyone sort of thought they were going to win, but then they, you know, ebbed and flowed a bit. They'd have an awesome performance and then a not so good one. So I think they really need to hit this, I suppose, end of your tour, hit the ground running and put make a statement and make other teams fear coming to play them at home. And both sides, because of that emotional nature that they play the game, will always test that discipline, as you allude to, Bryn. But a big test for the French, I think. There's nothing to lose for Argentina, in my opinion.
How about a tip for the Black Ferns versus England? Are we going to see a closer result? Is it possible to turn that around in a week, Jipper?
Oh, it'll be hard, but I think we'll see a closer result. But as I said, they're going to need to embed, you know, that understanding of each other and those communications on defence and in their kick strap. So I don't know if it can be turned around and be victorious, but if there's ever a side that will do it, you know, the Black Ferns are probably a side that are capable of it, because I feel like the dust could have, you know, been blown off, and now they're like, oh, that's over. We know what to expect now. We know where we're at, and it can really sharpen the focus and the desire during the week to lead to a big performance. So it's not without possibility, but it will be a very, very big hill to climb.
Is it really hard, Bryn? Is it really difficult to come back from something that large? We've seen the Wallabies do it fairly well against the All Blacks in recent years when they've been hammered and then be back in the running next week.
Yeah, oh look, it is going to be tough just with how dominant the English women were. But I think a lot of those things that they can control themselves. You talk around the defensive side of the ball, being able to get that cohesion and understanding, whether that be going away, having a look at some clips and being able to connect with the outside groups or the loose forwards or whoever's in those kind of decision-making defensive reads that you have to make. You can do that on tour, and it's the one really good thing when you are on tour. There's so much time that you can spend with each other and being able to rectify a lot of those things on the field and in the classroom and away from the footy field. So I can imagine that they'll be having those chats. The leadership group will be able to own that and get those things in place around that. But then also the set piece aside as well. Gypsy, there's some great solutions that they could go for with a lot of tempos, being able to have a few specials if it goes over the top to Ellie or Aisha or something like that. But I think, you know, they didn't want to lose that test match, obviously, but you know, you can make a lot of learnings from losing a test match. And if you look around the Black Ferns in the past, they haven't lost many games in their test matches. So I can imagine that they're a hungry group, and if you look at their messaging around on Instagrams and how much togetherness they have with that group. There's nothing better when you're a player, when you're under the pump and you're the underdog. When do we really talk around the Black Ferns being an underdog? So it's going to be a good learning for them to show a little bit of resilience and character. But I reckon they'll get their prep a little bit better, and then, you know, all you want to do is give yourself a chance to win a game. And so if they can rectify a lot of those things that we've talked about today, and it's a close game, then anything can happen. And then the big time players can step up and win a test match for them this coming week.
So is that England or the Black Ferns? Just looking for your pick on that one.
I'm gonna go our Black Ferns. I'm gonna go for Black Ferns.
Good on you, boy.
I'm gonna pick them. Come on, girls. Come on.
Nice. Good work, Bryn. And of course, the All Blacks are heavy favourites in comparison to that heading into the Italy game. It really is just a matter of by how much most likely. Jipper, how much?
Oh, it'll be 50 plus, I'd say, without being too disrespectful. But it will be a tough hill to climb. That they've struggled, obviously, in the Six Nations earlier in the year. And this task gets no easier.
Yeah. Put it, yeah, it's as simple as that. I think, yeah, it's going to be a lot of points, but I think, you know, knowing Ian Foster, well, from his messaging throughout even games against Tonga and the Americans, they'll have some clear plans around what they want to get out of that game. So whether that be exiting really, really well, like they did against the Americans, that they didn't do against in the Rugby Championship in some games, not very well. They'll find some form of stuff that they haven't been really good at, even when they played so good against Wales. They'll find out a few things that they didn't do well, and those will be focal points or movements around what they want in those kind of scenarios and being better moving forward, because a lot of men in their All Blacks group are going to get opportunities to play. And then now it's their job to be able to implement the things that the coaches are wanting to have. They're having their plan around what that looks like, but then at the same time, taking their chance, because knowing that, you know, the Ireland and the French game is going to be probably our best 23 moving forward.
Yes, another big weekend. Different kinds of results required for all sorts of different teams. The All Blacks looking to impress again against another understrength team before going into the big boys. Catch us all again next week on Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Bryn Hall, James Parsons, Ross Carl, Matewa.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.